This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's hour number two of Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We've got an absolutely tremendous hour coming up for you as we're going to be in the front half and the back half of the hour taking a look at some Major League Baseball. All 30 teams are going to be in action and lots of day games. That makes me very, very happy. What else makes me happy is to take a look at a little NBA as we are going to have Sheldon Woolman joining me in 15 minutes. He does great work over at Utility Sports. After recap what we all saw in the NBA draft, we saw a trade happening on Saturday with Lonzo Ball and Isaac Okoro being a part of a swap between the Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers. We'll ask if there's going to be any lasting impact in the East with regards to that switcheroony. And then Greg's random football roulette comes your way in 30 minutes. I've got 16 straight nights. I wanted to preview all 32 of these NFL teams. We're doing two of these a night for every show that I'm hosting. This is night number four, so I will be here all week, and I'm going to absolutely love it. We are going to be previewing all these teams. We got a few good ones cleared out last night. I was able to break down the Kansas City Chiefs, so that was a relatively fun one. I'm springing on who else I was able to preview last night. It was the Indianapolis Colts. We did the Colts, and I sort of tore the Colts a new one for the fact that they drafted Anthony Richardson. I always get joy in my heart whenever I am able to tear into the Colts for drafting Anthony Richardson, because that draft pick still makes absolutely no sense whatsoever to me, but we will see if we have any more gems tonight like that. And we certainly have ourselves a lot of gems here at the network, because every single show, you're able to see it on the VSiN Watch app, SiriusXM channel 158. And the reason why you get all this great programming, the great workers behind the scenes. Really, I work with the best team in the business. You've got my producer, Rick, doing a tremendous job setting me up for success. I know that he always does an amazing job of being able to lay things out. I know that he's been a VSiN fan for a very, very long time. He's been an OG follower of the old @GUnit_81. So that is very much appreciated, and we appreciate Rick and his efforts tonight. So a big thanks to him. I know that in terms of getting me set up for success, John and Johnny, they always do a tremendous job as well. And then if you're taking a look on the VSiN Watch app, YouTube TV, VSiN.com, just wherever you get video/moving pictures, I will say the toughest task here at the network is making me look halfway presentable in this format. Jarens is doing an absolutely tremendous job there, along with Al. These two guys, they are absolutely tremendous at what they do. They make sure that all the odds that you see on the screen are up to date, and I'm looking halfway presentable, and they do an amazing job, because I look halfway presentable. That is not done without the work of those two great men. And then if you're listening with regards to this show, whether that be on SiriusXM channel 158, might be a little bit after the fact as well. Every single hour of every single show is available in podcast form, VSiN.com/podcast, or wherever your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify. Let's look for the VSiN Bets feed. Chris, he does an amazing job. Big thanks to all those guys behind the scenes. They are the best in the business, and now it is time that I try to give you guys some winners. And if you did take the over in the Angels versus the Washington Nationals game, which I did give out, well, you got the over there, as the Angels had two guys get their first home run of the year in the 7th and 8th innings. Kevin Newman, his first home run season, and then Gustavo Campero, who I didn't know was an MLB player until now, he gets his first home run of the season off of this terrible Washington Nationals bullpen. And Angels going to get the job done here tonight. They're going to get you that over. That makes me feel very good. And in terms of being able to get the job done as well, Joshua Van in UFC 317, he's able to win by decision over Brandon Royval. Joshua Van, by the way, very young, 23-year-old, fast riser out here in the UFC. He was able to get it done, so we're going to see what happens in those main two fights. The Oliveira fight is going to be coming up in about 30 or so minutes. You get the Pantoja fight just before that, so we shall see what happens on that front. And we're starting to see the juice on the over in terms of that, in that Oliveira versus Topuria fight go up. The over of 1.5 rounds right now in a lot of places more around minus 165, minus 175. That opened up more around about minus 135, minus 140. So that's certainly something that I am going to be monitoring. Something else I need to monitor as well. What we're all going to get on the Sunday baseball card is, didn't have a whole like a lot of night games with regards to the Saturday baseball card, but we're going to have ourselves a lot of early games, and it is going to be a lot of fun to be able to break down. And how about if we take a look at one of the earliest games? And this is one of the games that did make my VSiN write-ups, 901, 902. Philadelphia Phillies on the road against the Atlanta Braves. Spencer Strider is on the bump for the Bravos, and Ranger Suarez is on the bump for the Phillies. Most places have this total at an 8.5. We're starting to see one or two straight eights popping up, but right now seeing a lot of 8.5 with the Phillies. You're able to get them as a, I'll call it a mid-size underdog, between plus 118 to a plus 122, neighbored about minus 132 to minus 144, that number on the Braves. And for Spencer Strider, he's looked much better in his last three starts. First five starts, the Braves lost all five of them. He was rocking north of a 5 ERA. He's been able to come alive with three runs or fewer allowed in his last three starts and 29 strikeouts in his last three starts, totaling 17 innings. So he is back to the Spencer Strider that we all know and love. And for Ranger Suarez, the Ranger Suarez that we all know and love is pretty solid. This is an advanced form of the Ranger Suarez that we all know and love. How about him over his last nine starts, giving up nine total runs, eight of which have been earned? He had that rough first start coming off the injury list, and that's very forgivable. When you have your first start coming off the injury list, you get a late start to the season. Typically, it takes a start or two to be able to shake off the rust. That was the case for Ranger Suarez. Not necessarily like some strikeout artist or something like that, but he is getting in the neighborhood about nine strikeouts per nine innings. The walks have been relatively solid as well, and he's not giving up the deep ball. Ever since that first start, less than a half a home run allowed per nine innings, doing an absolutely incredible job with a 1.17 ERA in this last nine-start stretch, and he's gone at least six innings in every one of these starts, and that is big because this Phillies bullpen is not great, to say the least. They are currently in the bottom eight in the big leagues in terms of ERA. Now, you've been able to have Orion Kerkering be able to give you a sub-3 ERA, and that's about it in terms of guys giving you productive innings, as Tanner Banks, along with someone like a Matt Strom. These guys have had their issues thus far this season. When you have Jordan Romano out there, well, he's just not great, to say the least. And flip side, this has been an Atlanta Braves team that has been solid with their bullpen. They're a top 12 team in terms of bullpen ERA since May 1st, even with the Desbel Hernandez injury. You have these guys like Dylan Lee, who's been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. They've been able to hold down the fort, but even with Ronald Acuna Jr. back, this has been a Braves team that overall this season has been in the bottom half of the big leagues in terms of runs per game. Now, Acuna is doing his part. North of a 440 on base, 9 home runs in a month, he's been able to do a very rock-solid job, but when you have these guys like Michael Harris, Ozzie Albies, hitting below a 240, that's a big giant damper for them. So these Ronald Acuna Jr. home runs, they've been a lot of solo shots rather than two and three run shots. And for the Phillies, not a lot of power on this team. You have been able to get some good production out of Trey Turner recently. He's the only player other than Kyle Schwarber who's been able to give you north of 10 home runs for this team, up to 11 bombs. Now, you do have guys that are finding a way to be able to get on base. You've been able to find that with regards to Turner, I mentioned before, Nick Castellanos, Alec Boehm, these guys in north of 275, and Schwarber himself in that neighborhood about a 365 to a 375 on base. But for the Phillies, they're going to need to find a little bit more, shall we say, production at the bottom of the lineup. You've been able to get that out of Otto Kemp ever since he's come up to the big league level. He's been able to do a relatively solid job, but I think that you've got two really good starting pitchers that go out there in what has been a relatively interesting series, to say the least. Phillies just absolutely blow the doors off of the Atlanta Braves in game one. In game two, you did see the Atlanta Braves be able to rise up, get the job done there. I think that the Phillies take this series. I'm willing to take a shot on them on the money line. And with regards to this total, set mine just a little bit below an 8.5. So I'm going to be in on the under, as well as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And something else that we are in on is just taking a look at what we're all getting in the game of baseball. And ProfitX, they do a great job of making sure that you get the best odds when you're betting on baseball, because it is the first ever peer-to-peer sports exchange. It is available in 40-plus states. It's the first of its kind in the U.S., and you're able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than the sports books. This guarantees you the best odds by about 10 to 20%. You can even request your own odds. Download ProfitX today and utilize the promo code of VSIN, V-S-I-N. That earns you 200 in profit cash over your first month. And how about if we take a look at this game out there in Charm City? Because this has been a series that has been very overwhelming because, well, with the Baltimore Orioles, they put up 22 runs in game number one of the series. The Tampa Bay Rays, they responded with 11 on Saturday. We'll see if we get something a little bit more calm on Sunday, and I'm sort of banking on it. 9-15, 9-16 on the card. It is the Rays on the road against Baltimore. Dean Kramer goes for Baltimore, and Taj Duncan, Milton Bradley on the bump for the Rays. Rays are right around even money to minus 105. Orioles, very slim favorites, right around about minus 110, minus 115. And I did feel like the Tampa Bay Rays deserved to be a little bit of a favorite here. Taj Bradley has been a whole heck of a lot better when he's been pitching on the road rather than at home. 4.57 ERA, 1.2 home runs, 3.6 walks per nine innings overall this season. That drops to a 3.32 when he's on the road, though. And on the road, he's been giving up less than a home run per nine innings. Meanwhile, Dean Kramer has actually been really good at home as well. He's rocking right now north of a 4.50 ERA, but that ERA goes down below 3 when he is at home. So he's been able to do a much better job when he's been out there in Baltimore. Keep in mind, in Baltimore, they changed around those ballpark dimensions a few years ago as well. I know that they've been doing some tinkering in recent years, but has proven to be much more friendly to pitchers. And for this Orioles team, they just haven't been great at the plate this season. Now, you're getting back Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser. Those guys help out with the lineup. They're not necessarily putting up monster numbers because they've dealt with injury all season long, but that should yield some fruit sooner rather than later. But outside of Ryan O'Hearn and Cedric Mullins, not a lot of power on the team. And for O'Hearn, he's been able to give you north of a 365 on base. For Cedric Mullins, barely hitting above a 225 thus far. So you need a little bit more there. Jackson Holliday has been able to find a way to be able to get on base. But the catcher spot is rough with now Adley Rutschman being on the injured list. Flip side for the Rays, this has been a top 10 team in terms of runs per game. Junior Caminero, Brandon Lau, both being able to give you 17 plus home runs. You've got a lot of guys at CO bags as well. Chandler Simpson north of 15 stolen bases, and for Jared Calabreu, 29 stolen bases this year. So the Rays hit for power, they hit for some average, they do a nice job being able to swipe some bags, and they've got by far the better bullpen in this one. The Orioles in the bottom 8 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Do think that you get a relatively solid start out of both of these guys. I like the under, and I do like the Rays on the money line. And what else I like? Being able to talk some NBA. Coming up next, we're going to be taking a look at what we've all got in the NBA draft and the offseason thus far, as we're going to be doing that on the flip side on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be going out to the progressive guest line here is Sheldon Woolman. He does great work over at Utility Sports, taking a look at this wonderful game of basketball. There's been no rest here in the offseason in the NBA, and he's been doing a great job of covering it all. Sheldon, great to get you aboard. Thank you.
Glad to be here, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you aboard. And Sheldon, before we dive in on any specific moves or anything like that, just how have you taken things ever since Game 7 of the Finals wrapped up? Because in a lot of sports, you have like a little bit of a cooling down period. You get a little bit of rest. Not so much with the NBA, with having a draft go down and a lot of big time trades over the last 7 days.
Yeah, I think it goes to show how year round the sport really is. You have to take every little every ounce of the season, both college and NBA, and kind of match them together. Try and find time to watch the NBA teams, try and find time to watch the prospects. And then that's a challenge for the front offices as well. You go from, you know, if you're Indiana or Oklahoma City, playing the most important game of the season, game 7 of the finals, and then less than 72 hours later, you're picking guys for next year's team. It's a pretty crazy race, and obviously presents a challenge, especially for some of those teams going a little bit deeper in the playoffs. But definitely something that I enjoy with how fast-paced everything can be this time of the year.
Oh, absolutely. And it was a fast-paced NBA draft, which, shock, shock, surprise, surprise, Cooper Flagg goes number one overall. Shock, shock, surprise, surprise, he's the odds-on favorite to be able to win Rookie of the Year. And hard to have anyone other than Cooper Flagg up there right now, but how do you take a look at the Rookie of the Year race and what I think was a pretty solid draft class?
Yeah, I thought a very strong draft class. Next year's might even be a little bit better, just a little bit of foreshadowing. But this year's draft class, I'm actually kind of surprised at the odds, especially with Cooper Flagg. I thought the odds might have favored him even a little bit further. Obviously, is the odds-on favorite. But this draft class, I think with all of the talent in it, Cooper Flagg, of course, is the head and shoulders best player. And he's going to a situation in Dallas where not only is he going to be able to showcase his talent, have the ball regularly, especially to begin the year when Kyrie Irving is still rehabbing from his torn ACL. I do think we're going to see Jason Kidd and the Mavs put the ball in his hands pretty frequently, allow him to make plays, make mistakes, but then learn and grow from them, just like he did at Duke and Montverde Academy prior to that. So I was pretty surprised that the odds came in the way that they did, even with him as the favorite. I thought maybe a little low, honestly, on him at this point, just given the expectations and the winning that Dallas is going to do. But I do think Flegg with the opportunity is going to probably run away with that award. But you never know. Injuries, of course, could shake things up. Knock on wood there. But there's a lot of talent in this draft. I like Dylan Harper quite a bit. He's the second best odds on favorite here behind Flegg. So I like Flegg, though, for the award big time.
Yep, absolutely. Currently minus 185 to be able to be Rookie of the Year at DraftKings. Always shop accordingly. Some places might have that a little bit more, a little bit less. And you mentioned Dylan Harper, plus $9 to be able to do so. But there was a second rounder that you really liked as well. And I got to see this guy up close over at Kentucky along with Arkansas. That'd be Abdu Thiohive. In a lot of people's minds, should have probably been a very, very late first-round pick. He slides into the second round. Talk to me about Abdu Thiohive and the impact that he might be able to make right away in the NBA.
I'm so excited about Abdu Thiohive, and especially his landing spot with the Los Angeles Lakers. If you look at the way that their season ended, they really didn't have an answer in the postseason for Anthony Edwards. J.J. Redick was consistently forced to send two at the basketball, put them into rotation defensively early. And the byproduct of that, or the reasoning for that, was the lack of athleticism to actually try and contain Anthony Edwards. They get Abdu Thiohive here, a guy who I had a very firm first-round grade on, actually 11th on my final big board in the 2025 draft cycle. And the reasons for that is, again, this is a great athlete, one of the most functional athletes in the entire draft. And I think for the Lakers, especially for a team that, even with how much talent they have at the very top with Luka Doncic, LeBron James, and Austin Reeves, you're lacking some of the explosion athletically, especially at this stage of LeBron's career. And some of the guys who are willing to do that dirty work on the defensive end of the floor, I think Thiro's going to be a very active, good point of attack defender for him. I do think there's, you know, a ton of potential for him to grow when it comes to his screen navigation with his strength as well. And then I think defensively, when it's not just time to guard the basketball, he gets active in a lot of other ways. He's a possession winner for you, getting on the defensive glass, can fill gaps. I think that's one area where, when he's helping on driving lanes, that's going to be super useful, and then can also meet guys at the rim a little bit. Did that a ton his first couple of years at Kentucky. Didn't have a ton of opportunity there on the offensive end of the floor early under Coach Calipari. But then upon transferring with Calipari over to Arkansas, kind of expanded his game, got to see a lot more offensive development and growth from him. Still a work in progress on that end of the floor, but the tools, the functional athleticism, all of that stuff really makes him a dream prospect for the Lakers to move up not once, but twice to get at number 36 in this year's draft.
Yep, I do think that Thiero, a really good fit for our Lakers team. That, let's call it what it is, the low post defense, the post play in general was a little bit suspect for them, so we'll see if that's going to be a bit better this year now that they have a full offseason to be able to prepare with Luka Doncic and company. As joining me right here on the Progressive Guest Line, right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, we've got Sheldon Wolman aboard, does great work over at Utility Sports, and I know you've got some thoughts with regards to New Orleans Pelicans and what they've done here in the offseason and what they did in the draft. They draft Jeremiah Fears at number 7, and then they trade up for Derek Queen. They do give up an unprotected first-round draft pick to be able to get him. Take me through the Pelicans, both that Queen pick and what you've seen from them this offseason.
I think the New Orleans Pelicans are one of the most fascinating teams to talk about from this past draft. Their aggression in terms of who they landed in the draft, I absolutely love. Derek Queen, I am higher on him than most. I think this is a potential build-around offensive player for an NBA team. You look at his functional coordination, his ability at his size, the ability to grab and go in transition. He's an excellent outlet passer. I absolutely love that fit for them when it comes to their dribble handoff game and playing out a delay action off the top of the key with his ability to drive the ball. He's a very gifted player offensively. And then you get Jeremiah Fears, another crafty, creative driver, someone with an electric handle. That's how I've continued to describe him. Now, he does need to see actual efficiency bumps at the rim and from the three-point line to warrant a top 10 selection, but I do think the potential is very high for him to ultimately reach that. He was a reclassified freshman, still extremely young, with a lot of room to grow in his game. So the close-up view is wonderful for the Pelicans. You might be hearing all of this and say, okay, how are the Pelicans not the most obvious clear winner of the draft? The concern points to the 2026 NBA draft, and you referenced that 2026 pick that they allowed to go to Atlanta in that trade. It was a swap best between their pick and the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll see what happens with Giannis this offseason if he stays or goes there in Milwaukee. But regardless, even with the Pelicans as young as they are, just having traded for Jordan Poole, I don't expect this team to win 40-plus games this upcoming year. So there's the risk of sending a potential top three pick in the 2026 draft to a very good Atlanta team where they maybe walk out with one of A.J. DeBonsa, Cam Boozer, or Darren Peterson, the projected top three players in the 2026 draft at this point in time.
Yep, that is a big risk, and that's part of the reason why I did think that it was a little bit of a reach for Derek Queen. Like, I love Derek Queen, but that unprotected pick, that is going to be a little bit of a roll of the dice, and I want to talk about a team that rolled the dice and came up snake eyes a few years ago. That would be the Phoenix Suns, and the fact that they are currently, shall we say, hamstrung a little bit by that Bradley Beal deal. It was a case where, in my opinion, they need to get a little bit more out of Kevin Durant. But I mean, you have some thoughts with regards to what the Suns did, both in the NBA draft and what they've just done overall this offseason as well.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there, bringing up Phoenix's lack of flexibility, especially with that Bradley Beal contract. And then trading Durant was, of course, the start of the offseason for them. And given the market for a soon-to-be 37-year-old player entering the final year of his contract, I didn't think the Suns had too much flexibility. So to get the package they did from Houston with Jalen Green, a player who I'm not enamored with, but I do think there is some talent. Dylan Brooks, definitely someone who can be a starting caliber player for you. And then pick 10, that was the real headliner in the return for Phoenix. And they nailed it on draft night as Kaman Maluach, who I thought should have been a top seven, top eight pick in this year's draft, slid just a little bit past that down to number 10. He finished number four on my final big board. And the reason for that is he is the best screen setter in the draft. He's a huge rim gravity big man who can screen, dive, roll, and gives Devin Booker the best lob threat he's had in his entire NBA career up to this point, which has me super excited for the Suns moving forward. Then you look at their other moves they were able to make. Get another big man with Mark Williams. They went from 0 minutes of good center play this past year to now 48 minutes of hopefully reliable center play. We'll see if Mark Williams can stay healthy or not. But I love where they started in that front court. And then day two of the draft was a huge win for them as well. Move up for Rashear Fleming at number 31. They found creative ways to use draft capital, second round picks, especially to get to where they wanted to go on draft night. Ensure that they got the St. John's forward, who's another big, long, rangy player. That's exactly what they needed on their defense, and he has excellent play finishing skills. And then they capped it all off with the very best shooter in the draft, Kobe Brea at pick number 41. You might be saying, whoa, very best shooter in the draft. Are you sure about that? I 100% am. He had the highest three-point attempt rate among all drafted players in this year's draft, and a super high three-point percentage. So this is a guy who is an absolute headliner when it comes to shooting the basketball. I loved watching him for the Dayton Flyers for the past few years before his first year in the SEC with Kentucky, where he was absolutely brilliant again as a movement shooting catch-and-shoot ace for the Wildcats.
Trust me, I love me some Kobe Brea as well. I'm a big college basketball guy, so I got to see him, and he was such a good shooter, and a man that was able to put in the basket tonight. You, Sheldon, you do a great job covering this game of basketball, and really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Great to be able to talk some basketball with Sheldon, and coming up next, we go from basketball to football, Greg's Random Football Roulette. We'll see who we preview next right here on Cash It Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out. I'm VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It was great to be joined by Sheldon Wolman talking a little bit about what we've seen here in the NBA draft offs, in the NBA offseason, a little bit about what we got in the NBA draft the last few days. Had some great insights there. So big thanks, Sheldon, for joining me in the last segment. We'll get to the NFL Random Roulette in a second because I know that it is the game that is sweeping the nation. It's sweeping VSiN Nation at the very least because it has been on the last three nights. It's now going to be four nights, but we did see in UFC 317, Alexander Pantoja, he was able to get a rear naked chokehold of Kai Kara France in the third round. So if you took that round prop, it does go under, and Pantoja, the relatively big favorite, they call him the cannibal. Well, he cannibalized Kai Kara France. That was a pretty nasty knockout right there, slash a chokehold. So he gets the job done out there. Now we need to get the job done and get you set for the upcoming NFL season. Our NFL betting guide here at VSiN, it's going to be coming out on Tuesday. It's going to have all my playoff teams in there. I've got a few futures, so I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not a guy with like 100 million billion futures or anything like that, but I do have quite a bit of insight with regards to these teams. We've got ourselves a really good upcoming season, and we've already broken down six teams, so how about if we go to it, Greg Peterson's Random NFL Roulette, and see what it spits out tonight.
It's time to spin the wheel and see where it lands. This is Greg's Random Football Roulette.
And how this works is we go to the website random.org, which They are getting a lot of shout-outs on this show. I have used it since a freshman in high school. You can randomize lists. You can just spit out a random number, what have you. So, you know what? Shoutoutrandom.org. We list all the teams that have yet to be utilized, and we just hit randomize. Whatever team is on top is the team that we go with. We just hit it, and we land on the Seattle Seahawks, one of the more interesting teams in all of football. And for the Seattle Seahawks, if you're playing a game show, by the way, this is not like the win a new car or anything like that. This isn't the booby prize. You're somewhere in between A and B. And for the Seattle Seahawks team, I actually like the Sam Darnold signing. Like, a lot of people are going to look at the last few games and be like, oh, Sam Darnold, the carriage turned into a pumpkin and everything like that. I'm so relatively high on Sam Darnold. He finally got proper coaching. And you can date that back to when he was with the San Francisco 49ers as well. That was really able to rectify his career because he was on that disaster of a Carolina Panthers team. He was with the J-E-T-S, Jets, which when he was there, it stood for just end the season. Hopefully it doesn't stand for that this year, because I know that there are many long-suffering Jets fans out there. So I hope for all of your sake that it's a little bit better this season. But right now with the Seattle Seahawks, they're out there in a NFC West that I think it's somewhat winnable. Like, with the LA Rams, there are a lot of people's favorite. I actually like the Arizona Cardinals personally. I think that the Cardinals are going to take great strides forward under Jonathan Gannon. I know that Will Hill here at the network, he's liking a little bit of Gannon to be able to win perhaps coach of the year as well. But right now we're seeing this win total for the Seattle Seahawks at an 8.5. Their odds to be able to make the playoffs is a plus 150. I will say they missed my overall playoff board. I don't know if they quite get there. They're pretty much tied with the Arizona Cardinals in terms of all their odds. In terms of plus 475 to win the division, they're 28-1 to be able to win the conference. They are right there, neck and neck with the Arizona Cardinals. A lot of people are thinking that the 49ers are going to have a little bit of a bounce back. They do lose some pieces from when they were just the ultimate creme de la creme team out there in the NFC over the last few seasons. But I do think that this could be potentially a solid year for the Seattle Seahawks. And you always have to keep in mind with the Seattle Seahawks that they're always going to have such a good home field advantage. Now, I recognize that home field advantage in the great game of football, it has been diminished just a little bit. But I don't think that it's for nothing with the Seattle Seahawks having all that noise, the 12th man. I think that's going to make a little bit of an impact. And what does hurt the Seattle Seahawks, you did have to shake up the roster a little bit in the offseason. Now for this team, they are no longer going to have DK Metcalf, but you bring in a guy that knows a whole heck of a lot about the division in Cooper Kupp. I don't think that that's too big of a downgrade. Like, Cooper Kupp, yeah, he's not going to be able to make quite the same explosive plays as DK Metcalf, but and you bring in him along with Jackson Smith and Jigba, I think that that's a really good 1-2 punch. Now they have to rely upon Marquez Valdez Scantling as well, but if you're able to have a fully healthy Kenneth Walker, that's a relatively rock solid back as well. This is an offensive line that leaves a little bit of something to be desired. That is something that I do have a little bit of fear with, but I do feel like this is a defense that you can win with as well. Like, bringing in Leonard Williams along that front center, front seven, DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, these are guys that are going to be able to get after the quarterback. I think that this is a team that has a chance to be able to surprise a little bit. Now, you take a look at the schedule that they've got. Week number one, rubber meets the road. They're going to be playing against the 49ers, but that's a home game. I actually think that that's a winnable game. You go on the road against the Steelers. I think that the Steelers are going to be terrible. Many people think that this is going to be a loss for the Seattle Seahawks. I think that they go on the road. I think that they can get the job done against the Steelers, even though that's going to be a little bit of a body clock game. Then you play at home against the Saints. That should be a W. That starts you off 3-0 right there for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, on the road against the Arizona Cardinals, very bullish on the Arizona Cardinals. I think that that's a loss. That's a little bit of a rough Thursday night football game, but that means that you get extra time to prepare for the Buccaneers who come to town. That, I think, is a win. You go on the road against the Jaguars. I think that they get the job done there. This could be their most losable home game, playing at home against the Houston Texans. I do think that the Texans are solid. We're going to consider that a toss-up game. I think that they have a few of these on the schedule. That's one that I'm neither here nor there on. And then they get a Week 8 bye. Pretty ideal bye right there. You have to go on the road against Commanders. I'm sorry, even though I do like the Seattle Seahawks team, that's just not happening. That's going to be a loss. At home against the Cardinals, because I do think that they split the season series, I think that you get a win there. On the road against the Rams, I think that they split that season series against the Rams. We're going to give them a loss there. They'll match up against the Rams at Week 16. We'll give them the win on that one. But then you play against the Tennessee Titans at home, very winnable game. The Minnesota Vikings, I'm not high on J.J. McCarthy. That's a winnable game. On the road against the Falcons, again, one of those toss-up games. Like, I think between the Texans and the Falcons games, you win one out of those two. So we'll give them the win here, and we'll give them the loss in the Texans game. At home against the Colts, W. Once again, the Rams, I was mentioning that that's a W. On the road against the Panthers, I think that they get the job done there. On the road against the 49ers, I think that that's a loss. I think you're looking at 9-10 wins for this team. Like, they were very much on the cusp of making my playoff board. Now, I think that it's going to take 10 wins to be able to make the playoffs in the NFC, because I do think that those NFC North teams, with having the Bears, the Lions, and the Green Bay Packers, not so high on the Vikings, but still, the Vikings are a pretty rock-solid team as well. I think that it's going to be a little bit of brutality out there in the NFC, where I think that you've got quite a bit of depth, and then you do have the NFC South teams that are going to be a little bit beaten up outside the Buccaneers, but I think that this is a above 500 team. Like, I think that you've got some good pieces here. I think that a lot of people are downplaying Sam Darnold and thinking, oh, we saw him seeing ghosts and everything like that. Sam Darnold is a legitimate quarterback. This is a guy that was drafted in the top five in the draft for a reason. This was a guy that really showcased himself at USC. This is a guy that has a relatively good rock solid frame. Is he going to be as mobile as, say, like a top five quarterback? Is he Lamar Jackson? No, but he's able to move around with his feet a little bit as well. This was a guy that was set up for success out there in Minnesota. We're not going to lie. But I do think that at the same time, this is a Seattle Seahawks team that they got to 10 wins last year. Like, a lot of people are forgetting that the Seattle Seahawks had a pretty rock solid year last year. Are they playing musical chairs at the quarterback spot? Yes. But how do you evaluate Sam Darnold versus Geno Smith? I think that Sam Darnold is right on par, and I think that the upside for Sam Darnold is actually higher than that of Geno Smith. Is the floor a little bit lower? Yes, it is, because we've seen Geno Smith be able to do it for the last few years, but I mean, prior to a few years ago, nobody knew who Geno Smith was. We see it all the time with some of these quarterbacks that it doesn't pan out for them. Spot number one, spot number two, but sometimes it's team three, team four that gets the job done, because when we label these guys as busts, the reason why we label them as busts is typically not because of their actual talent. The talent has always been there with Sam Darnold. It's just the fact that he's had a bunch of numbskulls as coaches, and they've had no idea what they've been able to do with them. They put him in a bad system. They tried to have him do stuff that he can't do. They didn't really be able to highlight, be able to elevate his play. That's what he got with the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers were able to develop him in that system. I remember when he came in Christmas, he looked relatively rock solid in mop-up duty. The Minnesota Vikings decided, hey, let's roll the dice, take a shot on them. And they were willing to pay some pretty premium money for a backup quarterback because they didn't know what they had in J.J. McCarthy. And frankly, I don't think that they still know what they have in J.J. McCarthy. That's why I'm feeling a little bit bearish on the Minnesota Vikings this year. But I think that Sam Darnold goes out there, has a relatively good year. And again, it's not the players that are busts. Typically, it's a situation. Typically, it's just a matter of fact. Like, I mean, you want to go way back in the day, David Carr, I will never label him as a bust for the Houston Texans. That Houston Texans offensive line was a bust. That entire organization in the first few years, they were a bust. We never know what David Carr would have been because he was on his back for the entirety of his career. And a lot of injuries because he was on his back for the entirety of his career as well. So I do think that that's big here. And I do think that, once again, as long as you can get a fully healthy Cooper Kupp, recognize that he dealt with some injury last season, he's going to be a best friend of Sam Darnold. Maybe he doesn't quite have the weapons that he had in Minnesota, but and you've got Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Cooper Kupp, and then you've got a guy in Noah Fant who I think is a little bit of an underrated tight end. I like this Seattle Seahawks team. I don't know if they can quite make the playoffs. Like I said, they were just right on the cut line for my projected playoff, but I ain't seeing that total at 8.5 with regards to win total, and you're able to get plus money on the over. I think that this is a team that could surprise, so I like the Seattle Seahawks for this upcoming season to be an above 500 team, and we'll take a look at another team in hour number three for my football previews, but coming up next, let's preview some baseball for this Sunday right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And we're back here on Cashing Out. I'm VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Hopefully you enjoyed that. A nice preview of the Seattle Seahawks for this upcoming NFL season. We're going to give you guys another random NFL team preview in hour number three you never know where random.org and the roulette wheel is going to land, and we've had ourselves a lot of fun. We've already checked off two teams from the NFC West, by the way, with the LA Rams being previewed a little bit earlier on here in the week as well. And something else I do have to mention as well, we've got currently a fight going on between Jake Paul and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. It was Paul going off in a lot of places right around about -$6, -650. There are some people that very much care about this. I personally could not care less. This is not a fight that I bet. I don't know how you'd be really betting it unless if you thought that Cesar Chavez was actually going to get the job done. And it's a Jake Paul fight, so I'm not sure there. But you know what? Where I'm at here at Circa, a lot of people are filling up to be able to watch that. And a lot of people filling up to watch the Topuria versus Oliveira fight. We'll let you know how that one turns out, as that round prop did go up quite a bit. The opening number was more around -135, -140 in terms of that round prop of 1.5. And that juice did go up to about -170, -175. If you want to talk about totals going up, how about if we go out to the great state of New York and take a look at what we're getting on the baseball card for this Sunday, as all 30 teams are in action, and you got a Yankees team that hasn't scored a lot of runs, and they're going to look to bust through against a man that was on the team a few years ago, 9-11, 9-12 on the big board. It's the Athletics on the road against the New York Yankees. Marcus Stroman is on the bump for the Yankees for the first time in seemingly neon, and Luis Severino is on the bump for the Athletics. Athletics are a mid-size underdog between +160, starting to see as high as a +175 out there, and you're going to be getting the Yankees in that neighborhood about -180 to -195. You're looking to lay run F. You're going to be finding that right around about a +110 or so. Total has gone to 10 here at Circa. Other places are at a 9.5. Are the Yankees going to be as completely abysmal on offense as they have been the last 3 weeks? No, they have scored 4 runs or fewer in 13 out of their last 16 games, but it's one of those I need to see it to believe it sort of things with the Yankees and just how they've scuffled on offense. I think that two things can be true. The Yankees are not as bad on offense overall as they have shown to be over the last 16, 17 or so games. But at the same time, were they maybe playing above their skis a little bit towards the beginning part of the season with Ben Rice cranking out 13-plus home runs, with the play that we've seen out of Trent Grisham and company? I think so. Like, Trent Grisham, prior to this year, he had like a 3-year run where he was completely miserable. Now, Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge. He's giving you 28 home runs. He's giving you north of 460 on base, but this is a very Aaron Judge-centric lineup, and they have gotten back Giancarlo Stanton. He's been not necessarily providing the deep ball yet, but has been able to do a relatively solid job of being able to move line. That said, they go up against a guy in Luis Severino. You knew that he was doing for some regression on the road. Like, prior to his last start, he had been posting up a 0.93 road ERA, gets completely little blazed for 7 runs in 5 innings in his last start against the Detroit Tigers, but I mean, he's still rocking a sub-2.25 ERA on the road. He's going up against his former team in the New York Yankees, so some of the Yankees players are going to have some familiarity with him, but he's going to have something to prove in this start. I'm seeing a +175 or two out there. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the Athletics on the money line. Like, I recognize that this is an Athletics bullpen that has been horrible. And I mean horrible. They entered in the series dead last in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Hogan Harris is the only guy that has seen north of 7 appearances that is applying a sub-4.25 ERA in this bullpen, but I mean, you saw the New York Yankees not be able to hit this bullpen on Friday. You saw them not be able to hit this bullpen on Saturday. They just seem like they're a team that has lost. I always like to call it a baseball ditch. They're in the baseball ditch right now, and they're right now trying to be able to pull themselves up. They need some jumper cables. They need a tow, what have you, and they just have not been able to find it quite yet, and it's been an inconsistency with Paul Goldschmidt as well. I think that this has gone under the radar because with Paul Goldschmidt, he's not quite the same power hitter that he was in past years, but I mean, when the Yankees were at peak form, he was giving you a .400 on base. That has slid now to about a .360 on base, which doesn't sound significant, but him not being able to get on base, that's been impacting the team a little bit. And for the Athletics, this is a team that's in the bottom half of the big leagues in terms of runs per game, but you've got Brent Rooker, Tyler Soderstrom, both give you 14-plus home runs. You're able to get really good production out of quite a few of these guys that just find a way to move line. Luis Urias has been solid. Jacob Wilson continues hitting north of 340. He's learning to draw a few more walks as well, and Nick Kurtz 12 home runs. He did not begin the season with the big league team. He's getting a home run every about 13 to 14 at-bats. He has been rock solid. And with the New York Yankees, this actually has been a solid bullpen. Luke Weaver is back after he was missing for a few weeks due to injury. You've had some mix and match guys like a Tim Hill throw in there as well, a guy that began the season on the injured list as well, in a guy that I actually like, Jonathan Loaiza, Yuri De Los Santos. These guys have been able to supply you with a sub-3.5 ERA, so that's been pretty rock solid for the team. And I do think that for the Yankees, you actually get a relatively okay start here from Marcus Stroman. I think that him coming off the injured list, so he did not really look good in terms of his minor league rehab starts. I think that they're going to pull the plug on him very early if he does not have it, and they are going to need to, because when he was at home last season, he's only made 3 starts this season, north of an 11 ERA, very small sample size, but he was posting up north of a 5 ERA at home last season. He was giving up north of 1.6 home runs per 9 innings. I think they can go out there, give you a few okay innings. They turn it over to the bullpen from there. And I think that the Yankees bullpen helps you out with this under. So at a plus 175 or greater, I'm going to be willing to take a shot on this Athletics money line. And with regards to the total, set mine at a 9.2. Here at especially a 10, but even just a 9.5, I'm liking the under, as well as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And if you want to know where the money and the bets are going, you want to check out the VSiN betting splits, because they come straight from the source. They come from DraftKings along with Circa. Circa is known for taking big bets from all sorts of professional bettors, and DraftKings, they give you a little bit more of a broader market perspective. This means that you're getting the real action, not just the public money, but the kind of wagers that move lines. See the percentage of bets versus the percentage of handle on every single game across every major sport to help you make smarter, more informed bets. Visit vsin.com/subscribe to be able to get our exclusive betting splits for as little as $9.99 for the first month. vsin.com/subscribe. As it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. So we're liking it under in terms of Yankees versus Athletics. This is another pretty high total that I'm going to like an under on as well. 913, 914. Let's stay out there in the AL East. It is lower power for the Toronto Blue Jays, who are on the road against the Red Sox. Walker Buehler goes for Boston. And for Boston, they're a slight underdog. Between even money to plus 105, neighbor of minus 115 to a minus 125, that number on the Toronto Blue Jays. And right now, that total is a 9.5. And Eric Lauer has actually been really solid for the Blue Jays, as he's right now supplying the team with a 2.22 ERA. Now, I fully recognize that the fielding independent is more around a 3.80. He's been giving up a few more walks than what you'd like, but a 9.1 strikeouts per 9 innings in that neighborhood, about 1.1 home runs per 9 innings. So I don't think that that 2.22 ERA is sustainable, but he's clearly looked rock solid. Even go back to a few years ago when he was with the Milwaukee Brewers, had a good year for them, and Walker Buehler has been a whole heck of a lot better when he has been at home rather than on the road. And very, very demonstrative splits with Walker Buehler. Right now, he's giving you north of a 6 ERA. It's been less than tremendous for him. 3-plus runs allowed in 4 out of his last 5 starts, dating back to when he was on the injured list. But I think that he finds it a little bit more here, as he's posting up north of a 9 ERA on the road. But at home, this goes down to a 3.31 ERA. 1.1 home runs allowed per 9 innings at home. North of 2 home runs allowed per 9 innings when he's away from home. For the Red Sox, they had a 15-run outburst on Saturday against the Blue Jays. I don't think that Lightning is going to be striking twice. They had scored 28 runs in their first 10 games without Rafael Devers. Now you've got Wilyr Abreu, who's really wiling out. He was able to have a home run in the game on Saturday. 14 home runs overall for the season, but he's really the main guy in this lineup that is providing power, because you still have Alex Bregman on the injured list. Now you've got plenty of guys that do a nice job in terms of getting on base. These platoon players like a Rob Revsider has been solid. Abraham Toro, these guys have been able to north of a 275. Carlos Narvaez at the catcher spot has been able to give you about a 350 on base. So I've been liking what I've been seeing there. And for the Blue Jays, the offense has been a little bit better recently, but we also have a lineup that is averaging fewer than 3.9 runs per game away from home. That is a bottom 7 mark in the big leagues. Now, I will say this. The power is starting to come along for the team a little bit more. George Springer, along with Bo Bichette, Vlad Guerrero Jr., all with 11-plus home runs this season. Guerrero's been able to give you north of 375 on base. And then you guys have these guys like Nathaniel Lux, Edison Barger, being able to hit about a 262, 270. Don't call his name. Alejandro Kirk has been able to give you north of 300 as well. You've got even someone like an Ernie Clement who's done a good job getting on base. And for the Blue Jays, they had to use up quite a bit of that bullpen on Saturday, but not necessarily so much of the trustworthy pieces. Eric Lauer has went five innings or fewer, and I believe all but one of his starts thus far this season. They used up Mason Fluharty, who's not necessarily too tremendous in the bullpen. You're going to have Brandon Little, who's been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. If you need some length, Yuriel Rodriguez has been able to give you a sub-3 ERA as well. And for the Red Sox, top half of the big league team in terms of their bullpen ERA, think that this is a lower scoring game. We mentioned an 8.9, so like that 9.5 under and the Red Sox on the money line. And coming in next, how about if we do take a look at a little bit more of the Sunday baseball card right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.